Wadiwa Robinson have been playing their music since the 1980s, often building their own instruments and finding a unique sci-fi sound through them. Today, as part of our independent Tasmania project, we're catching up with Graham, Craig, and Tash, also known as Professor Presley, Dr. Smith, and Turbo Girl.
This is Edge Radio on 99.3 FM. My name is Duncan, and currently interviewing the members of Warning Will Robinson with Craig, Graham, and Tash. How are you going, guys?
Good.
Great.
Great, thanks. Excellent. Thanks for having us.
No worries at all. First question I've got to ask is, why the name?
We were given it by another band.
Which band was that?
Worm Technology. They had finished with it and no news for it, so they gave it to us.
They actually didn't want it.
Oh, okay. What inspiration did they have for the name first, or did you just like the name and figure, you know what, it'll stick, it'll work for us?
We grew up in an era of optimism in science, and an old show called Lost in Space was all about that. Space is the new frontier. We're going to be driving around in bubble cars and jetpacks and things, and we thought, that's a really nice thought.
Really so nice.
And the robot that on the show always said, the little boy on the show was named Will Robinson, and the robot always used to say, "Warning, Will Robinson," whenever danger was present. So that's where they got the name from. We were looking for a name because everything that we'd tried we hated, and we basically just gave up looking for a name and said, yeah, that will do.
Yeah, nice. Pages and pages of names that just no one could come to an agreement on.
Can you tell me more about that? I mean, why did you lean towards that part of that part of music, that style?
I think very early on in our writing career, we really didn't want to play commercial stuff or everything that everyone was doing. We wanted to do something a bit exciting and the stuff that we were interested in. So we made our own music, and that's kind of the style that came out.
What would you describe it as?
Retro-futurists.
Yeah. Retro-futurists.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Again, like as Craig was saying, the optimism of the 50s style, you know, space frontier with the modern technology of today, the golden era of science, I guess, was the inspiration for our theme in everything we write and play.
I mean, could you give me a bit of backstory as well on the personas that you have? Because it's not just Graham, Craig, and Tash playing in the band. It's I believe it was Dr. Smith, Professor Presley, and Turbo Girl.
That's right. And yes, well, yeah, we discovered in about 2004 we were going on a much more technical direction, electronic direction, which really was suiting us well for the songwriting stage we were at. And we said, let's make a theme band out of this. And so basically, we're a character band of a muddled sort of mad professor with a crazy doctor who's the lead singer, and an interesting out of space from another world space girl. We added on the robot. Elmer the robot came along in 2010 when we played Mona Foma 2010 as a stage prop, which absolutely everyone absolutely thought was crazy. It was great. Nothing like it. Basically, Elmer is a singing and dancing robot that we have on stage with us, who abuses the audience, introduces our songs, does backups, swears, drinks beer, anything that you would want to have in a robot.
I don't suppose if you could mind me asking, how does that work in the like style of the band? Because I don't think many bands have got robots in their bands. How did you like first come up with the idea of having a robot in the band?
Who thought that up?
I don't know. I think he just turned up one day.
I think he just read a note in the paper looking for a robot in a band and just applied. I think that I work in the chemistry department here at the university, and we've got some very old chemical equipment and computers and things like that. And I thought, looked at a monitor screen that was an ancient old thing off a chemical instrument, and I thought, that wouldn't make a bad head for a robot, you know. And I think, and it started from there, and I found a few more bits and pieces of discarded equipment, and it started coming together. And I talked to Craig and said, you know, this might be an idea for something on stage. Why don't we do this? And then we had all of the parts to build the actual controller part of him to do the work and the speech synthesis equipment, and it all came together from there. And his sound suited our electronic, otherworldly, futuristic sounds that we were doing at the time, and he just slotted straight in.
Tash, could you tell me a bit about the backstory of Turbo Girl and how you eventually came into the band as well?
Well, that's my dad, Dr. Smith. So
this is a generational band.
In the real world, but in Warning Will Robinson, Turbo Girl, she's just a cool alien, and these guys just thought they might need another dimension. First I was in just doing some backups and stuff, and then we thought, actually, yeah, why don't we have an alien.
We found out she can sing a lot better than me. So,
on our new album, Tash, Turbo Girl does quite a few songs, okay. So which is really pleasing for us because it's really added a completely extra level of sound and opportunities for us, which we can now explore. Because before we would say, "Oh, we can't really do this sort of style of song because that needs a good voice to
someone who can actually sing."
Someone who can actually sing. And now we have that person, and it's enabled us to write songs for her to sing, or Tash write her own songs. So it's, now we've got that extra dimension and sound.
It's okay. A lot less scary being a character as
well. Absolutely.
A lot of stage fright.
Yeah, that's right, you hide.
You guys originally started out in Sydney. That was nearly 30 years ago, is that correct?
1981.
Yeah. 1981. How have things changed from, I mean, starting out then in the music industry and the performing style of things, how have things changed from 1981 to present time in 2012?
Oh my goodness.
Hugely.
Back then, you basically had, you didn't have any computers to record on. It was all analog tape recorders, reel-to-reels, cassette. And we did all our recordings on cassette players in the first couple of years, bouncing down or just live straight in off a mixing desk to record our first couple of albums. We then, in 1984, bought a four-track reel-to-reel recorder, which enabled us to, 83, I think, to overdub and make more complex sounds. It wasn't, there was no way that you could do really complex sort of things. They did MIDI, the electronic communication between musical instruments, MIDI, hadn't been invented yet, so you couldn't sync sequences and drum machines to each other and just press a button and play. You actually had to do things live.
So we were actually a real band, guitar, drums, bass.
Punk, in essence.
We didn't know at the time, punk. But they said, yeah, we're punk.
Yeah. we didn't know how to play, so we just made up our own stuff. So we didn't do covers except maybe, you know, Sex Pistols or those sort of things that were around to play to parties. But the songs that we wrote on our own were basically because we couldn't play. And we just said, let's make up something because we can't copy other people's songs. We don't know how to do it. We played with weird sounds, with weird gadgets. And
homemade instruments.
Homemade instruments just to get a particular sound that we might have been after. So the difference is back then we're all very much organic, hands-on things. Whereas now, and there was no way of publishing this stuff unless you had a record company. Alternative labels just weren't really around then. There were a couple of alternative radio stations, but you kind of didn't have any outlet unless you played in pubs and a talent scout was around and signed you up to a label. Whereas now, you can distribute all your stuff for downloads on the internet, be your own boss, be the master of your domain, as Seinfeld says.
So, from the sound of it, it's gotten a lot easier as time's come on to record or play around and get a different style with music. Has it taken the fun out of it?
I don't think so. It's taken... We're always finding new, exciting things when we do it, so there's always new discoveries with it. But it's definitely a different feel, but I wouldn't say it's taken the fun out of it.
It's a different fun. In the old days, it was an exploratory... You're learning an instrument like a bass guitar or a guitar or keyboard or drums, learning to play them and do strange things with them or whatever you want to make the song that you want. Now it's electronic instruments we use. We don't know how to play them very well either, and... it gives us that avenue of not knowing what we do, explore, it makes random things happen such as we would have never thought to do. Oh, that's a great thing. Let's play around with that sort of style.
And we've also found that learning how to play the instrument tends to take away the creativity of it, so we'd never really like to play.
I mean, tell me a bit more about these experimental instruments you guys use. All kinds of different things. I've heard crazy stories about them. Tell me more. Tell me some of the instruments that you used and thought, wow, this sounds amazing.
At the moment, we've made a couple of keytars, so guitars, some keyboards we can wear and play like guitars, which call up any number of sounds we sort of want to dial in.
We've got some exotic instruments that I've collected from around the world. I'm a Casio enthusiast, Casio collector, Casio musical instruments, and they made some pretty strange things. I've got a Casio guitar synthesizer. I've got a Casio digital saxophone. I've got the Casio cassette guitar, which was a guitar, electric guitar with a cassette player built into it. All these strange things. I've got a Yamaha digital trumpet, which I've used on this new album, which can make any sound other than just trumpets, trombones, you know, saxophones, other instruments. So I've used that on this new album that we've done to record that, some trombone sounds. And I really don't know how to play them. So what sounds comes out of them, we explore. I only know the notes that I need to know at the time because this instrument, I've just got it, and it's strange and it's wonderful and... Oh, what does it do? Well, I just fiddle around with it till I get something that works in the song. But I'm always on the edge of my seat of able to play it.
That makes it very exciting. Yeah. You never know if it's going to work or not. And when it does work, it's like, yes, we've nailed it.
So it sounds like you've been pretty much experimenting for about 30 years.
Exactly.
How has that gone for you? I mean, like, you're finding completely different sounds and songs or style of music. How do you reckon it's, like, shaped Wadding Will Robinson as it's been now?
Well, I think it's the whole basis of it, because we're not ever having to stick to a formula. We're just doing what we do. And
I think additions that come along the way mutate us into something different. And in fact, that's how the band has always been, because we've always been the basic core three people, and we've had guest friends drop in and do a part on the song, like some vocals or something like that, or we've written a song for them. And the same thing now, Tash has come along, and now it's changed our sound, because we're writing songs for her and she's contributing and writing songs. Elmer has come along, so
he's the robot.
Elmer the robot. He presses his influence on us. We have a couple of friends who we call in to do guitar parts that we might do, which I don't know how to play, and that will change the sound. We're a melting pot of different people and sounds and projections of future things.
So how hard was it to get your music out there in the first place?
We, in the early 80s, we just ran it off on cassettes and handed it out to people, friends, distributed it to as many people we could, handed it in to a couple of people who had connections with some radio stations.
You got a bit of airplay in the Philippines.
Yeah, and as the digital sort of era caught up with us in 1999, we started our website, started downloading, allowing people to download. So we got a lot more distribution that way. And we haven't pushed ourselves to get out there and play much or a record label or sign up with anyone. So this has all been off people just browsing and finding things.
How's the scene, for instance, from moving to Sydney to Hobart? Was there any differences, or was it kind of the same?
Well, I think Hobart is a much more culturally rich, compressed sort of area. There's a lot more happening in a small area that's more accessible. I mean, I'm sure this is all happening in Sydney, but it's so widely spread that you don't get to see or meet any of the people that are doing it. Whereas here, you just run into people who are doing similar things and share ideas and compliment each other, and it's very fertile.
And in Sydney, after the 80s, things went very much downhill in pubs with regards to live music and pokies in and things. It was coming down here in 2004 was like a breath of fresh air. It was like the music scene 30 years ago in Sydney, where you could walk into any pub and there was a live band playing. Walk in for free, and you know there's a bunch of bands playing, and just the art here is just tremendous. The art and culture, so much above what's going on in Sydney at the moment.
How was your first show in Hobart? I mean, fun, memorable experiences.
We were a bit spoiled, actually.
Our first show after not playing live in this band for
20 years
was Mona Foma on a massive stage with a huge LED screen behind us, and one of the biggest sound systems I've ever heard, and that was absolutely insane.
Luxury. We were able to put all our technology to the test there too, because we had I had some synchronized video going on behind us for each song, things happening that which are actually being cued as part of, you know, synchronized to the words in the song and things like that, and that was running in the background. Tasha at that time was running the laptop before she was actually in the band. She was running the video production for the live stuff for the band, and it was just an amazing, amazing technological event. It just so inspired us. We thought, if this is what it's like down here, we're staying.
So, I mean, talking about experiences, I mean, what was probably the best experience you ever had playing in the Wadding Will Robinson?
Probably that.
That
absolutely.
That was brilliant. Yeah. It was such a pleasure. And the people who set up Mona Foma, Brian Ritchie and Chloe Goodyear, who was actually in charge of looking after us and the bands playing, did a tremendous job in just contacting, liaising with us, helping us to be where we had to be.
We actually felt like a real band.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we felt like pop stars.
Are you currently signed to any record labels?
We have our own record label called Nuclear Technologies, and we've created that for the purpose of distributing and putting our own stuff out. But we haven't got a industry connection yet. Craig works in a large music store in Hobart, and the connections that he meets are astounding. He'll say, "Oh, I met such and such come in today out of some touring band," and
okay.
So it's fertile ground for us to step out into. We've just got to take that step yet, as being I think we have to do some more live playing, because if we sign up for a deal for a record, they're going to want us to play a bit. So we've got to get to that stage where we've got some live mileage under our belts.
So you're looking for, you're obviously looking to be signed, for example, for a record label, or do you want to still stay kind of
not really. We've never really had the drive to be the biggest thing ever. We just do what we do.
And we're worried that if we were to sign up, we would lose control of the creative process, that they would consider us a product that we have to then conform or slot into certain standardised slots, and your music really doesn't fit this genre. We'd like it if you change your songs to suit like this by doing this style in the future, or make an album that's a rock-based album like this. And we're not sure that we'd be comfortable with doing that because we've just been so free to do what we want that inspires us. So we're a bit of in a no man's land in that respect, but we're still feeling out how we can get more people knowing about us but yet still retain the creativity that we have.
So I was reading that you basically built your own mixers and equalizers as well. How did you go around that?
Well, in the early days we did that. Now we buy kind of off-the-shelf product because the things that we could afford were just rubbish. Things were much more expensive then, and so we had to build our own mixers, our own equipment to do the processing and to get it onto a cassette in those days. We don't have to do that now because technology prices has come so far down that we've got everything we want in bought. But we still build electronic gadgets and musical instruments that to suit our dial or a project that we're working on.
Yeah, quite often we've just stumbled across things that go together and, hey, that's really cool, let's stick with that.
Something that we might have in our trash box, we'll pull out and plug it in and it'll make some real weird noise because it's set in some strange parameters that we hadn't, set, and it's made a strange noise. Yes, that'll work with this next song. That inspires us and we'll jam along with it.
Yeah, also we'll have an idea of a goal we want to go for sometimes, something we want a definite sound, and we just make something to do that specifically.
Mm. I built a wooden tea chest bass out of beautiful Tasmanian sassafras wood to get a double bass type of sound. And it's basically a wooden box with, the old-fashioned curtain wire thing and a broom handle type thing that you play in a bush band, but much more elaborate than that, with a real neck and real strings and a pickup in it, so you can record it, to get a certain sound for a certain song. A cigar box violin, which we've used on one song. And this is the thing, sometimes we'll build stuff and never use it again. So we just end up with this collection of strange things hanging on the wall.
This has been Warning with Robinson with Graham, Craig and Tash, also known as Dr. Smith, Professor Presley, Turbo Girl, and unfortunately Omar could not be here.
He's down the pub.
I reckon we'll go for some music right now, feeling like Brown Note Apparatus. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having us.